We've been trying to give shiurim on Monday nights about some real shadows that have come. Usually in my shul, we're doing chamayah for Shabbos afternoon, so I talk about other kinds of shadows, other kinds of halachas, about things that are relevant to the parsha. Every once in a while, I get something that I could be yotzi for both. So I'm not saying I'm going to give the same shiur Shabbos afternoon, but in theory, really could talk about it because it was actual shiur that I received this week. And at least part of the story it actually has its roots in Parshas Baaloscha as well. So the shiur that was presented was as follows. Somebody called me late one night this week. Somebody had gone to the mikvah, and on the way back from the mikvah, they noticed that there was something stuck in between their teeth. So usually, we try very, very hard not to send somebody back to the mikvah after the person already went, especially if they already left the building, already on the way home. The last thing we want to do is send the person back to the mikvah, but every once in a while, the din is they really have to go back. So this is the shadow that presented itself. Instead of a person finds something between their teeth, after going to the mikvah, is there a real need to go back to be tovel a second time? So first we'll learn through the sugya, then we'll see the end, but it has to do with Parshas Baaloscha. So the sugya begins on the first of the Marmikomos, in Maseches Kedusha and Daf Chaf Hamid Aleph. The Gemara tells us a story exactly about this case. Amar Rabin, Amar of Adam, Amar of Yitzchak, Ma'ise b'shivcho shebeis Rebbe, she'tovla v'olsa v'nimtza etzem b'shmein shineha. At one time she had gone to the mikvah, and then when she came out of the mikvah, so she found that there was a bone, if it's a meat time, a bone from something was stuck between her teeth. V'tzricha Rebbe tzbila acheres. And Rebbe Dan Elsi Paskin, that she has to go back to the mikvah for the second time. So we're treating that bone that was found between her teeth as a chatzitza, as something that would be a barrier that would invalidate the tefillah. The Gemara just immediately tackles the question, is there even a chatzitza inside of the mouth? Why would one suggest that maybe not? So the Gemara continues, Nihi debia samayim lo bo'inon, mocham aroel lova bo'imayim bo'inon. The halacha is that when a person goes to the mikvah, there is no need for them to open up their mouth under the water, because inside the mouth is what's called in halacha beis hastarim, it's the hidden part of the body, and the din is that bias mayim, the only part of your body that has to touch the water, is only the part that's been achut. So your skin has to touch the water, your hair has to touch the water, but inside your mouth there's no need to touch the water. Inside your nose, the water doesn't have to get in. Inside your ears, the water does not have to get in. There is no requirement of bias mayim. If there's no requirement of bias naim, if the water doesn't have to get inside your mouth, then why in the world should we care whether you have a chatzitza in your mouth? That's what the Gemara distinguishes and says no. That even though there is no requirement of bias naim, but mokam ha-royal bias naim bo'inim, it has to be a place, the area has to be clear of chatzitzos, and you have to have at least the theoretical potential of water getting there. So, tachlas, lamaisa, you don't have to open up your mouth and choke on the water. But on the other hand, if you have a bone, if you have a piece of meat, if you have something inside your mouth, so that will disqualify the tefillah. So again, it's a very, very strange formulation. Because I understand the din of chatzitza if and when the water has to touch. Let's say the person goes to the mikvah with a band-aid on. So the water has to touch the skin. So I understand when the band-aid may be a chatzitza. If a person doesn't have to have the water anyway, so why is there a chatzitza? The Gemara says, that's the way it is. And the Gemara says, just in case you thought that was strange, you're not the only one, the Gemara says. It's not a very strange din. But we have a precedent for this in a totally different area of halacha. Kid Rabbi Zeira, the Amar Rabbi Zeira, kol aroy lebila ein bila mekeves bo, kol she ein aroy lebila bila mekeves bo. There is a din that when a person brings a korban mincha, you have to bring flour and you have to bring oil and you have to mix it together. The lulav b'shem is supposed to mix the two together. What if a person brought the flour, they brought the oil, and they didn't bother mixing it? So the din is it's not ma'akev. So b'diavad the mincha is kasher, the mincha is acceptable anyway, even though bila was not done. So then the Gemara says, what if a person brought a flour offering in such a way, they brought 1,000 pounds of flour, so it's a half a cup of oil. So the Gemara says, even if you try to mix it, it wouldn't mix properly. It says the Gemara, then the lack of mixing is ma'akev, it disqualifies the entire mincha. So there is no requirement to do bila, but you have to have the ability to do bila. And if it's impossible physically to do bila, then the entire mincha is null and void in the Torah. What's the cutoff point? The Gemara gives a shiur 60 to 1 or something. The Gemara gives a whole cheshbon of Maseches Menachos. How do you figure out how much flour and how much oil you have to have in order that bila could potentially be acceptable? The Gemara says, you see from this statement of Rabbi Zeira, a tremendous chiddush, that sometimes the halacha doesn't really require something. If you don't mix the flour and water, the korban's kosher anyway. Or over here, you don't really have to have the water get into your mouth. But potential is necessary. The potential to have mixing is necessary. The potential to have the water get in is necessary. So this is the background that the Gemara tells us why there's even a problem of a chatzitza in the base of starm in the mouth in the first place. even though it seems to be illogical. That's the din. So there is a question that Tosus raises in the second of the Mamikamos, in Maseches Nida, the Nandaf Samach Vavam Beis, that although the Gemara does make this comparison between the mixing of the oil or the lack thereof and the chatzit and the Beis Hasparim, they don't quite seem to be parallel. In what sense are they not exactly the same? The Tosus says, Im Toimar, Amay lo ba'inan bi'asmayim lechadchila b'beis hastarim, k'mobila. When it comes to mixing flour and oil, true b'di'eved, the carbon will be kosher if you didn't mix it, but tachlis, if you come to the Beis HaMikdash and ask, Mr. Cohen, am I supposed to mix the flour with the oil? Of course you're supposed to. The Torah says, b'lula b'shevin 100 times. So of course you're supposed to lechadchila dubila. So he asked Tosfos, how come when it comes to the mixing of the oil, the flour and the oil, although it's not ma'akev if you didn't do it, but lechatchili is supposed to do it. When it comes to going to the mikvah, it should be the same thing. Although it's not ma'akev if you don't open up your mouth, why aren't you required to do so lechatchili? That's clearly not the din. So why is it that if you really believe that tefillah b'mikvah and bringing a korban mincha are identical to one another, they both have a requirement of potential, neither of them has a requirement of actual, but why lechatchili do they part ways? Why is it that when it comes to tevila, it's not even lechetchila required to open up your mouth. When it comes to the mincha, it is required lechetchila to mix the flour and the oil together. So comes Tosfos and says, and we'll skip down to the second line. V'yesh lomar the ain svara gabe tevila shloch pida Torah elish yitar ha'adam ve'ein lomar the lechetchila liboy the cave in the b'di'evet Torah lechetchila nami lo boy v'tar lo tevila. So Tosfos develops the following yisoid. Tosfos differentiates between what we call in the world of lumbers a mitzvah in contrast to a matir. There are certain actions that the Torah says which are mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to put on tefillah, there's a mitzvah to eat mas, a mitzvah to shake a lulav. Then there are other actions that are not mitzvahs per se, they're matirim. Why does a person go to the mikvah? Going to the mikvah, according to Tosfos, is not per se a mitzvah. It's a matir. That means it's necessary in order to reach the point of being tahar. Let's say a person decides they never want to go to the mikvah. They want to remain tamei l'olam v'ad. And technically speaking, they could probably do so. Because the tefillah of the mikvah is not a mitzvah in a classic sense. It's a goal-oriented. The goal is to become muteris, to become tahora. So comes Tosfos and says that when you're dealing with a mitzvah, such as bringing a korban mincha, so the concept of lechatchila and medievitz makes sense. It means do the mitzvah in the most appropriate way, and if you didn't, the mitzvah is still fulfilled in the less appropriate way. When it comes to a matir, if the whole goal is to become tahor, tachlis, you became tahor. What do you mean lechatchila you have to become tahor this way, and medievitz you become tahor in a less appropriate fashion? If you're tahor, you're not tahor. If you're tahor, it means if the tefillah really works, if lemaisa the tefillah is acceptable, then you did what you're supposed to do. So it's inconceivable to talk about a lechetchila and a matir on a level of derais. That tells us big breakthrough of Maseches Nida. So when it comes out, the question is there a din of bias mayim in the base of starim? Do you have to open up your mouth underwater? Absolutely not. Do you have to even lechetchila? Absolutely not. Is the tefillah good if there was something stuck in between the teeth? The answer is no, that the tefillah would not be acceptable. Is this a din min haTorah, or is this a din min derabbanan? This whole formulation that there's a problem of a chatzitza and a beis hastarim, is this a real din deraisa? So Tosfos sounds like yes. Tosfos is comparing it to menachas, and yes, and kashas, and back and forth. So Tosfos says in a few places, this is a real din min deraisa. And other Rishonim say the whole thing is not true. Other Rishonim say that min haTorah, you don't really have to have your mouth clean either. Midaraisa, if you don't need bias mayim, you don't really need, there's no real requirement of chatzitzas to be clean either. The whole thing is a chumah midrabanan, heimam ve'mamru. Chazal made up the whole thing. The whole institution of a chatzitzas in the base of starim was made up by Chazal. Why did they make this up? What was wrong with the way the din deraisa was? Some of the Rishonim say that they're afraid people didn't get confused. Because if you start to tell people that, well, there's no problem of a chatzitzas in the base of starim, where exactly is the base of starim? Inside the nose. How far is the nose? Is this the base of starim? Is that the base of starim? Is this the base of starim? Now that it gets very, very confusing. Because I wanted to be clear that get rid of all chatzitzas. Don't take any chances. Get rid of all your chatzitzas no matter what. But midaraisa, as long as your skin is free of chatzitzas, any chatzitzas inside the nose, inside the ear, inside the mouth, all that stuff is all midirabbanan. It doesn't make much of a difference for us whether it's a problem in a Torah midirabbanan. The mice, it's a problem. And it's a problem even b'di'evet, as the story goes with Rabbi Ben Nasi. So whether we're going to insist that this tevila is not acceptable in a Torah midirabbanan, it's not going to make much of a difference for us. If it meets the criteria of chatzitzas, then it is going to be a problem. The question is, does everything in the mouth pose a chatzitza? Every single time you find anything in the mouth, that automatically disqualifies the tefillah? So the Gemara tells us in the third of the Mamakamos that there are very, very specific conditions that are necessary that have to be met in order for a chatzitza to disqualify a tefillah. The Gemara tells us that the halachas, the intricacies of hilchos chatzitzas, are dinim deraisa, and they're all derived from Teresh B'Peh. It says very, very little in the Teresh B'Chsav about chatzitzas. All the Torah says is, V'rachas is called a servant ma'im. You have to wash your body, you have to immerse your body in the water. The Gemara says, Rasha, V'rachas ben b'sar b'mayim. Shloyei davach chaytif ben b'sar l'mayim. You're not allowed to have anything separate, no barriers between your body and the water. How much is a barrier? When is it a barrier? Not a barrier. When is a speck a barrier? Is a cast a barrier? Is this a barrier? How do you know? So the details of the chatzitza were all given to us, Ishra P'ish and Meishra Rabbeinu. So the Gemara explains that the basic dinim of chatzitza really revolve around two different conditions. So we take a look at the third of the Mamakonis. The Gemara needs enough some examine with days. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. The Var Torah, in order to pose a problem mid the Araisa, to disqualify Tefillah mid the Torah, Rubo HaMachbid Alav Chaytzeitz. You have to have two conditions met. It has to be a rove, it has to be on most of your body, and it has to be something that you're machbid on, something that you really care about, something you would want to remove. What if you don't have both of those conditions? Rubo V'ena Machbid Alav, Ena Chaytzeitz. If it's a rove, but you don't care about it, you're okay leaving it on your body. But that would not be a problem in HaTorah. But the gozer, aruba shenamach, v'shum ruba hamachbid. And Chazal made a gezerah that if even one of those conditions are met, even if it's just a rove, or if a gozer, aruba yuto hamachbid, v'shum ruba hamachbid, or if it's just a miyot, but it is something that you care about, so that would be a problem as well. So min HaTorah, the only time you have a chatzitza is when both conditions are met. It's a rove of your body and your machbid, and you really, really care, you want to get rid of it. If either or of those conditions are present, then it's only a chatzitza midrabbanan. It should be obvious that we have almost never have chatzitza deraisa. I can pretty confident to say I have never ever had a chatzitza deraisa shaila, and I'm not expecting one in the near future. So the only scenario of a chatzitza deraisa would be, if you think about it, a person just went mud sliding, and they're going to take a shower an hour from now, but before they take a shower, they head to toe in mud, they want to go to the mikveh. So that would be a dover, a robe, that would be most of the body, and it's a machbid. They don't really want the dirt to be there. That would be a deraisa. Short of that, whether the woman has a bandage on, she has contact lenses in, she has stitches in, she has something stuck on her teeth, you name it, all the shayas that we get all the time are all midirabbanon. They're all concerns of a mir machbid. Again, we're not minimizing the midirabbanon. We're shomatar mitzvah, so we want to keep dinim derabbanan also. But the deraisa, it's almost impossible to have a chatzitza. Then the Gemara asks the question, what if it's a miyot she'eno machbid? So why don't we say that's also in the derabbanan also? If a ligzo nami a miyot she'eno machbid, we should mir a machbid. The Gemara says a higuf a gezeira, but a negum a nigzo gezeira, that would be already too far removed. That would be what we call a gezeira le gezeira. Chazal were in the business of making gezeiras. That means they decreed, don't do X because it may lead to a deraisa. We don't make a statement, don't do X because it may lead to Y, and Y itself is only midrabban, and that's exactly there, that's really too far removed. So to make a one step remove gezeira, that was supposed to do, to make far fetched gezeira is more than one step, that would be ain goes in gezeira to gezeira. So in all the dust settles, there are four different categories of hilchos chatzitza. There's a deraisa problem, which again almost never happens, that's a ruba hamachbid. Then you have the two derabbanans, either rov she'eino machbid or miyot hamachbid, which is most common. Then you have case number four, category number four, but miyot she'eino machbid, which is not a problem at all. The Ramah writes in the Yidin Hilchos Tefillah that lechetchila we tell people to take off all chatzitzas, even miyot she'eino machbid. We don't want to get involved in shayla, the rabbis need to get a frantic phone call at 12 o'clock at night. So we tell people lechetchila to remove everything. But push comes to shove, b'di'evet, if a woman didn't remove the miyot she'eino machbid, so b'di'evet the tefillah would be acceptable. We would not insist that she goes back to the mikvah. But if it's a miyot machbid, then it would be a problem. So now the question becomes, in this case, the person had a little something stuck between their teeth. So the question is that a davar machbid? Is that a davar machbid? It's clearly a miyot. Is that a whole body? It's a very, very small now. And it's in a beis hasdarim, but beis hasdarim is also subject to the rules of chatzitza. So the only question we have to ask the woman is, was this a davar machbid or not? Do you care about it or not? Now, when you're speaking about being machbid, who exactly defines who's machbid? Who's that part are we talking about? Different people, different standards of care. So the Rishonim have a discussion about this, and basically, in Shulchan Aruch we ask it, one of two possibilities. Either if you personally are machbid, that's a problem, or if most normal people are machbid, that's also a problem. So either one of those things will pose a problem. So in this case, when the person described to me the amount of food and the kind of food that was stuck between the teeth, normally she would have taken it out beforehand, but whatever, she didn't realize it, she missed it. And now she wants to know, and now it's an hour later, and she wants to go gaval, so I have to go back to the mikvah. So it was a miyud, but the question is maybe it's a miyud of machbid. So I asked the person who asked, told them after the woman. So I asked them, is this the kind of thing that the person would be machbid on? So they posed that to the woman, is this something that you care about? I said, if you wouldn't be going to the mikvah, this would be a regular night, you would have all of a sudden discovered this in your teeth, would you have bothered to remove it? You just left it there. So she answered honestly that she probably would have removed it. So I said, okay, so you probably would have removed it, then you have to go back to Bitovel again. That's a miyot ha-machbid, which poses a problem with the Rabbanon. The ikra din, you really have to go back with the bracha, because the first tefillah really was not acceptable on the level of the Rabbanon. I'm always weary to tell people to go back with a bracha. Maybe they really weren't machbid, maybe they're nervous now, maybe they're, who knows what. And they're suffering, bracha them machbid anyway, so I wouldn't tell them to make a second bracha. I mean, it wasn't really, you know, Igloy Mills a little bit of Zulatala, but they were trying the hardest, like an Ifa effort. So I don't know if Shomal will deal with that. But my business concern is to make sure the tefillah is going to be good. So we tell them to remove that thing, and then really preferably they should go back to the mikvah. To be good.
You say the Gedra Mach is only if you would take it out, or if like, you were embarrassed that it was there, like you would walk out in the street with it being there, you would.
No, I mean, your natural reaction, it's like very often, let's say, very common shallow. When a woman comes out of the mikvah, she comes home, she realizes that she had clear nail polish on, she finds a little speck, she forgot to remove the clear nail polish. Most people, if they were, let's say they were in the middle of a wedding or something, they noticed, hey, there's a little speck of clear nail, they would have run to the bathroom quickly and taken off. They wouldn't care less about it, nobody sees it anyway. If, let's say, a woman went to the mikvah and she had half of a red nail polish on and one half a nail or something, that people don't like to walk around like that, so that's probably the Dover Mount, potentially the Dover Mount. So again, it becomes a little bit subjective, a little bit objective, but it could potentially make all the difference in the world. Again, all on a level of the Rabbana. So this idea that we could have real shilas of chatzitzas in the mouth, particularly things that are stuck between the teeth, so it's because of this that a minug developed, and the Rishon already quotes, the Rosh already quotes this minug, is that we try to do anything and everything to avoid any of these kinds of complications. If we take a look at the fourth of the Rambam Kamot, so the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Kuf Tzadi Chesed Chavdala quotes, Tzricha lachzo shinek shloye be'emda v'chaytzeitz, that a woman has to make sure that she cleans her teeth before, and she shouldn't go to the mikvah without cleaning her teeth and don't worry about it later. She should try to clean out her teeth before it. So again, the Shulchan Aruch is not talking about exactly how to do this. In the days of Shulchan Aruch, there weren't multiple options. We didn't have flossing and brushing and all kind of half dozen other things. So bottom line is, we tough shenayim tesh. You should do whatever's best possible, whatever's within the realm of normalcy. So if she usually uses floss, she should try to clean her teeth properly. If she's afraid this floss is going to get stuck, she doesn't know how to floss properly, she talked to a dentist about teaching her how to floss, but whatever, she should figure out how to clean the teeth as best as possible. Because if she went to the mikveh and didn't, and she came out and she finds something on it, that would be a problem. By the way, that is not a double negative. It says lo also lo tvila. That's not what it means. Laman aleph is the os of the that's going to the shach. So you don't have the shach printed on the page, so it's a little bit misleading. So then there are more like the yesh nogim. I'm sorry, there's still the shulchan aruch. The yesh nogim shulo lechol basa biyom lecht on the base at tvila. That there are many women who have the practice that they will not eat meat on the day that they go to the mikvah for this very reason. Why? Because meat tends to get stuck in one teeth more than other kinds of food. How does the Shulchan Aruch, how does Rosh know that that's true? That's the sixth passion. The pasuk describes eating the slav, that the meat was still stuck. You don't need Pashtun Aloscha. You don't need me to tell you that. That's the Gemara. The Gemara speaks about the sugya of a person ate meat and then wants to eat milk, wants to eat cheese. So we know the halacha is achal basal yachal gvina. The Gemara quotes that pasuk basal then ben shenem. There's a shalom rishon. Why the Gemara quoted that pasuk? So there's a big machlekes in rishon. Why do you have to wait from flesh to milk? What's the goal of waiting? So Rashi explains that because your mouth has the taste of meat, it takes a few hours for the taste of meat goes away. So if you're going to have ice cream after you ate meat an hour ago, so then you're going to still have the taste of meat. It's going to be the tenth amount of eating basal chol together. It's not going to be deraisim, it's going to cook together. But deraisim, it's only also with dech bishol, but it still would be also with the rabbanim. And the Rambam writes that the reason for this issur of ochel basal yechel gvina is because of a basal denim ben shideh. Not so much because of the taste of the meat, but because it's actually mamashim, it's actually pieces of meat that is stuck between the teeth. So different opinions what, but according to some, the whole issue of not eating milk until you waited X amount of time emanates from the same pasuk Abbas Odenu Ben Shinea. It's based on this that Mordechai quotes the name of his Rebbe, the Maamar Rutenberg, that the Gemara says that if you eat cheese, you're allowed to eat meat. The Gemara says there's no need to wait whatsoever. So the Maamar Rutenberg one time ate some cheese, and he ate meat a little bit later, and he found, after he ate the meat, he found a piece of cheese that was still stuck between his teeth. So he felt so terrible about it, even though he wasn't required to worry about it. That's what I'm saying, because we know Beishanim. It's only meat that we have to be worried about. Sometimes it happens. So the Maamar Rutenberg was mekabel upon himself, a person of Chumrah, not to eat meat immediately after eating cheese. He wasn't telling this to Klal Yisrael. It was his own kibbutz, his own mitzvah chassidus, because he felt very bad. At one time, Nebuchadnezzar was nichshol that he had some bas mechol in his mouth at the same time. But the Maamar Rutenberg was a girl of Dor at the time. So when he started to follow this Chumrah, inevitably his Tamidim started to follow it also. And their Tamidim met Tamidim, and their Tamidim met Tamidim. And after a little while, you had all of the Ashkenazi Jewry following the same Chumrah. That's the source of what we have today, that at least certain cheeses now, then the post can talk about which kinds of cheeses this is a concern for. But the whole idea of waiting between from cheese to meat is not in the Gemara. It's not at all rooted in the Gemara. It's the exact opposite. But there was a person, a Chumrah, the Maamar Rutenberg, that has become adopted to become part of our Amin Hogim, at least in the Ashkenazi communities as well. But again, only refers to certain kinds of cheese. So back to our story in terms of going to the mikvah. So the Rosh in Maseches Nida writes, that the same way that we're worried about meat stuck between the teeth of these Vilchus Kashrus, we're worried about it for Vilchus Tefillah as well. And therefore, the proper practice is that a person, a woman, should not eat meat on the day that she's planning on going to the mikvah. The RFLP, the third line in the fourth of the Memorandum, even though she's going to check anyway, she's not going to stop going to the mikvah without checking, she's going to clean her mouth out. It's going to be hard to clean it out properly. We're always afraid something's going to be left. And therefore, minig yafu, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes in the Rosh, this is an appropriate minig. Even though this doesn't appear in the Gemara only talks about after the fact that it actually happened, but the Gemara doesn't mention the idea of being careful not to eat meat that day, but this is a minig dates back to the days of the Rishonim, and it has been accepted in Shulchan Aruch as a minig yafu, and that has become our standard practice today. Then the Rama adds on, the Ein Lecho Ben Rechita L'Tvila, as an additional care, she should be careful not to eat anything between washing herself and going to the mikvah. A woman has to do a whole series of washing in chafifa before she goes to the mikvah. So she should not eat between the chafifa and the actual tefillah itself. Again, all for the same reason, because we're afraid things are going to get stuck. And then the Rama adds on, the Ein Lecho Kol Hayom Kodem HaTefillah B'Botzek or B'nei Oshel Shaiv or Shai Yadavik B'Av. This all the same kind of a care, the same caution that we shouldn't have, is the source of the idea that a woman should not be baking on the day that she's going to the mikvah. She shouldn't be working on wax candles. Most people aren't doing that, but women have to bake today. So the custom is that a woman goes to the mikvah that night, she doesn't bake that day. She doesn't do anything that would involve getting her hands dirty. So that's the minig that there are more quotes, that's the minig that we have in those communities. The women know about this, should be careful about this as well. That all kind of activities that could potentially cause problems later, we should try to avoid. So the one that stands out of the Rishonim is this minig about not eating meat. This has its roots again all the way back to the days of the Rishonim. The Taz in the fifth of the Mamakamo, so the Taz writes a minig yafahu. Let's say she didn't know this. She didn't know this minig. She, by mistake, she ate meat. So there's no need to delay going to the mikvah. It's not a din. It doesn't need to disqualify. Just clean it properly. So if she, by mistake, ate something meat for lunch, so she should go to the mikvah anyway and not worry about it. And then the Ramara, then the Taz writes, however, on Shabbos and Yontif, a woman going to the mikvah, let's say Shabbos, let's say Yontif, then she's permitted to eat meat. This minig doesn't apply. Why is that? Again, if it would have been a real din, that's something else. But it's not a din, it's only a minig. So the minig was not instituted by Mokom Mitzvah. If you have meat on Shabbos, have meat on Yontif is a mitzvah. And Yontif is actually more common than Shabbos. Yontif is real simchus Yontif. Whether women are included in that or not is a different story. Shabbos is an Oinik Shabbos. It's supposed to try to have meat, try to have also on Shabbos as well. But since it's a Siddhas Mitzvah, so the importance, significance of the Mitzvah overrides this otherwise minig. It's just, you know, teeth out proper.
And it's not going to say that this is different from kashrus because knowing actual meat, you should have chicken broth that has no meat in it. That wouldn't be
a problem. Right, so the truth is that chicken broth, off the record, probably is not a problem with Basu B'chol. It's probably also not a problem having to wait. We have a minig that we wait even for Tafshosh or Basu, but according to Ben Risham, it wouldn't really be necessary. It also would only apply to real meat.
Okay. If a person does, if a woman doesn't eat meat on Shabbos, can she fall to the mikvah? She might bleed.
Well, when she goes to the mikvah, she goes to Matar Shabbos, she'll fall to Matar Shabbos. You mean if she forgot, she's going, let's say, at Yom Tov or something. So it depends. So if she knows for a fact she's going to bleed, then she shouldn't floss. That's a gracia. If she thinks that she may or may not, so that's a davishin miskaven. So then, as long as she doesn't have to rip the floss, she has the pre-cut or the sticks, whatever it is, so then that would be technically okay. So again, so this is a minig. It's an important minig back in the days of Hashem and Kodesh Hanoch, but the Taz says that ultimately Shabbos and Yom Tov is more important. So probably chicken would also be a problem for this because the whole mokos from the slav, a boss of Dena Ben Shanim, that wasn't real boss of either. It was also beside Reif. Boss of Chav, right, but boss of Chav the Reif is only beside Behema, but when my sech, Adam made it to Karna that opens like Behema. No, no, that's also true, but the boss of Ben Shanim still applies to beside Reif, because the Gemara quotes the Ferish, quotes that boss of. So the folks can extend this a little bit and say, what if you have other kinds of suitors mitzvah? So again, let's say, well, there's other important reasons for eating boss. That would also be okay. Also make a perm suda. The Rambam also writes just that bosser for a perm suda, like, just like a yantif, so that would also be acceptable. So one time I received the shayla about a Hanukkah suda, having bosser and Hanukkah. Are you allowed to go to the mikvah, you're allowed to eat meat at a Hanukkah party, and then go to the mikvah a few hours later? So not only did I get the shayla one time, it was one particular Hanukkah, I got the shayla about 10 times on the same day. And I started to scratch my head, and then I realized what was going on. So I've quoted this before in the shul, I've said that I'm not expecting the shayla again for about another 24,000 years or so. I'll tell you why. It was when Hanukkah Thanksgiving were on the same day. So usually, who would ever dream in a million years of eating a Hanukkah suda? No one thinks about it, meet a Hanukkah suda. So all of a sudden, I start getting bombarded that Thursday, Thanksgiving, Hanukkah. A woman wants to eat turkey at the Thanksgiving dinner, but she's supposed to go to the mikvah that night. So she was smart enough to realize that, oh, maybe it's a local mitzvah. So she didn't lower herself to ask me that I have to suda Thanksgiving. That much she shouldn't have a chutzpah to ask. But so a couple of women came with the Hanukkah suda, Hanukkah suda, mitzvah. I don't think so. The Shacharach writes that Rivoy Sudas and Chanukah is not really a mitzvah. The Father Ramah writes, if you sing some dreidel dress, sing some Chanukah songs or something, so it elevates and makes the Shichol Sudas mitzvah. But I don't think, you don't need turkey for that. You can eat latkes and Shalai Donuts and also get a Sudas mitzvah out of that. So I don't know, I thought that was a little bit of a stretch. And maybe you could argue, it's turkey, it's not real meat. Nah, it's also against the Pasuk in the sixth Pasha. Also, then it mentioned applies to poultry, slav, applies to turkey as well. So the Fianni is dieting if he gets the balance. Baruch Hashem, the good news is that the way the calendar is set up, I think it's 24,000 years from now, something. So we hope that way before that time, Mashiach will come, we'll be back to Makashra for your era. Everyone will be living in control, and we'll still be celebrating Thanksgiving. I don't know, the American Embassy, we'll find out what happens, but hopefully we won't have to deal with that problem anymore. So anyway, the bottom line is that this shayla really does happen. Hooray, it happened this week. This is a fairly common shayla. So people should be careful beforehand to avoid the shas mapping. If it happens, then they have to assess in the Rav. Is it a davar machmir? Not a davar machmir. Is there a necessity to go back to the mikvah second time? You got a couple of calls. next week, that's a good question. People are still around?